The Israel Report with Rolien Marx.
Rolien, a very good afternoon to you. We're going to jump straight into it because we ran out of time yesterday. The United Nations Human Rights Council has passed four resolutions against Israel this past weekend before it broke for its hiatus. Tell us a little bit more about these resolutions and why is it so Israel-centric at the moment in respect of what we've seen coming out of the UNHRC?
Well, this is absolutely extraordinary. I've just watched Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky address the United Nations Security Council, and his testimony on the atrocities of the town of Bucha are absolutely distressing. You and I spoke a bit about it yesterday, saying there was Bosnia and Herzegovina. There have been numerous genocides, Rwanda being one of them, since the Holocaust and the end of the Second World War. The scenes described by President Zelensky to me are reminiscent of Srebrenica and the atrocities committed by Slobodan Milosevic. But let's talk about the UN Human Rights Council, which have this absolute obsession with the state of Israel, these independent inquiries that are headed by investigators with histories of anti-Israel bias, given the free rein to investigate their new head of the UNHRC, who herself has compared the founding of Israel, which the Arabs call the Nakba, to the Holocaust. This is the type of propagandist that we are dealing with. But over the weekend, the United Nations Human Rights Council choosing not to focus on Russia, not to focus on Eritrea or Iran or Belarus or Syria or any other part of the world where there are gross human rights violations, and now as we're seeing atrocities to the point of genocide, but rather to spend that energy putting out four resolutions against the state of Israel. We know that one of the resolutions calls for a limited arms embargo. So not only is there the demonizing of the state of Israel, there is this attempt to limit Israel's ability to defend herself. It's absolutely obscene what goes on at the UN Human Rights Council. Coupled with that, we heard from our ambassador to the UNHRC, who says all it is an echo chamber of hate. Israel is the permanent item that for the last 16 years keeps coming up again and again and again. And despite this, there have been no resolutions against the Palestinians for the firing of rockets, for the committing of terror acts, even as recent as just last week. In fact, there was no condemnation of the terror attacks against Israeli civilians, which included nine Israelis and two Ukrainian foreign workers. It is absolutely the circus of the absurd. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah, it is hectic. And when one sees that Russia actually sits on the UNHRC, it makes it all the more bizarre. We know that the UK and the USA want to expel them. Do you think there's a chance that this may be successful?
Well, according to UN Watch, which is a phenomenal NGO that monitors the United Nations and doesn't let them off the hook for their hypocrisy and for their failure to focus on human rights abuses in other parts of the world, has said that it's absolutely untenable that Russia should be part of the UNHRC. Let me just remind listeners that Iran heads up the UN Council on the Status of Women as of last Friday. I mean, this is just absurd. You know, we've just heard President Zelensky saying that the United Nations must either make real reform or it should disband itself. And he also has called for Russia to be kicked out of the United Nations, not just the UNHRC. But it's absolutely preposterous that Russia, at a time when it has invaded unprovoked a sovereign state, where it is committing gross atrocities, where it has used the excuse of denazification, and I know that there are many listeners out there who'll say, yes, but there's the neo-Nazi group that's part of the army, and I'm going to bring a harsh reality. There are neo-Nazi groups that are part of many, many countries, including the United States. There's a presence there as well, including countries in Europe. So, you know, to single out Ukraine for that, you know, it's not taking into account the situation around the world. But it is absolutely preposterous. We are watching with our own eyes what is happening in Ukraine, and we've just heard the calls from Liz Truss and Boris Johnson from the United Kingdom, as well as the USA's ambassador to the United Nations, calling for Russia to be expelled from the UNHRC. And she has just said in her address to the UN Security Council, this is the ambassador from the United States, saying Russian forces are taking away passports and cell phones and separating families from one another. I don't need to spell out what these so-called filtration camps are reminiscent of, and it is chilling.
I'm going to come back to Ukraine just now. Before that, can you give us a brief update on what's happening in respect of Operation Breaking Waves? Why Israel thinks that the next 2 months may be more volatile than what we've normally seen? And if so, why are we seeing this increase in violence?
Well, I think we are seeing it for several reasons. First of all, we are in the middle of Ramadan. This is traditionally when we do see a significant uptick in violence and violent acts against Israelis. We've had riots at Damascus Gate for at least 3 nights in a row. Police have arrested at least 14 for riots and violence at Damascus Gate. We know that Israel's Security Cabinet is going to meet for the second time in 2 weeks, next week. The meeting will take place on Sunday, and that earlier today, Prime Minister Bennett, addressing reporters, said that at least 15 terror attacks have been stopped by our security forces over the last 2 weeks. I also think that the world's attention is very, very much focused on Ukraine and the humanitarian crisis there, which gives little space for the Palestinians and coverage of the Palestinians in the mainstream media. And we are seeing, and we have seen it since the tanks rolled into Ukraine, we've seen this absolute clamoring from the Palestinians, pro-Palestinian activists, to try and bring back the narrative to focus on the Palestinians, making the gross comparison between Ukraine and Palestinians. This comes at a time when Palestinian leaders have yet to condemn Russia. In fact, they are extremely supportive of Russia, and all the accusations that we have now become familiar with against Israel, the apartheid accusation, the birth of BDS, actually have their roots in the Soviet Union era. So it's preposterous that we have this comparison and this absolute clamoring for media attention at this time.
Yeah, it's quite hectic. Moving back to Ukraine, and this of course is a strongly Israeli type story, because Israel has had to contend with all number of threats over the years and have built up defenses. People are becoming obsessed with demanding that Israel sends Iron Dome batteries to the Ukraine. Now, I myself, as an ex-military man, know why this is highly unlikely and in many aspects not possible. But can you simplify what's going on for our listeners, this obsession with sending the Iron Dome batteries to Ukraine, whether it would be of any use, and why you think this obsession exists?
Well, it's extraordinary to see that this kind of obsession. First of all, the Iron Dome batteries are defensive, and they're not going to stand up against the kind of artillery attacks and missile attacks coming from the Russians. Ukraine is a much, much bigger space, and Israel doesn't sell our Iron Dome batteries internationally. In fact, the US is in possession of two of them, and it was a very, very complicated process to sell them. Notwithstanding the fact that they're designed to intercept a certain type of rocket or projectile. Having said this, nobody seems to be putting pressure on the United States to send their Patriot missiles and any other kind of missiles and batteries to Ukraine. There is this absolute obsession. You know, I don't know if it's a fascination with the images that we saw coming out of Israel's 11-day conflagration with terror entities in the Gaza Strip last year, where we saw these spectacular visuals of the interceptors as they intercepted incoming rockets or projectiles. But they are also very, very expensive and would cost an absolute untold fortune to roll them out across Ukraine, notwithstanding the fact that they are absolutely ineffective against the barrage that is coming in from Russia, including the use of hyperbaric missiles. And it fascinates me. You know, it's a combination of absolute ignorance of how Iron Dome works. It's often just taken as a buzzword. They are also short-range air defense systems, which, as you would know as a military man, are completely, completely ineffective here. But it's also this, I don't know what it is. It's this fascination that Israel has to solve the problems of the world with our technology, and by completely excluding the very, very tenuous and precarious security concerns that we ourselves have.
Rolene, thank you so much for the update. We're actually ending with a couple of seconds to spare, but I would say that with the people's obsession with the Iron Dome is actually complementary of what the Israelis have done to protect themselves. And although it's a completely different situation and used in a different manner and fashion, people are confused and they need to just take into consideration the significant differences. Rolene, thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to be in conversation with you again, same time, same place tomorrow. And as always, thank you so much for that insight as into what's happening in the Middle East, as well as what's happening in the Ukraine.